We're sponsored by Overcast, an independent podcast app that embraces the open world of podcasting instead of locking it down.
No exclusives, no premium content, no paywalls. Just a great podcast app for everyone. Get it for free
in the App Store. I love it when we sound like weird little commercial boys.
Yeah, it's my favorite thing in the world. People should pay us to do more commercials.
Get your Overcast. They should. Hey, yeah, you out there, if you're an advertiser and you want us to read stuff, I'll do it. I'll read anything.
I'll read anything. Get your sex wet at Timbo's Chicken Shack.
Get your sex wet at Timbo's Chicken Shack.
Yeah. In Tampa Bay, Florida. Open 7 days a week, 30 hours a day.
I would love it if Timbo's Chicken Shack asked us to read an ad.
Oh, yeah. Well, they just did. We got $1,000.
Oh, thank God. We're rich.
Unfortunately, I lost it all in stocks.
And I lost it all when I was watching season 3, episode 14 of Desperate Housewives.
Oh!
Because I am Mackenzie.
And I am Ned.
And this is Wisteria Gaze, baby.
Oh, my singing voice is shot. I don't know if anybody knows this, but if you if you're on hormones, your voice changes, at least for testosterone.
What?
I know nobody could tell. I sound exactly the same as I did when we first started this show.
I did love getting so many DMs, like, there was like a month where we didn't record, but like we had a backlog of episodes. So there was like a month in between you, but only a week in between the audience. And I remember like people messaging us and being like, Ned's voice, because it seemed like it had dropped like so much in a week. And I love that so much.
I'm fine. I finally became a man. I finally did the big one.
You got a beautiful grizzly deep voice.
Yeah.
It's very sexy. I love
it. But now my singing voice is shot.
You gotta.
So
are, you gotta.
Next
are you
memorial a, is gonna be really interesting.
Are you a baritone?
You know you had something special when you go see movies. It's a song I wrote in third grade.
Oh, I was about to say, what song is that?
You need a boyfriend.
What's that song?
Sorry.
Oh, I love it so much. Hey, you know, distraction is great. Welcome to this episode, Ned. How are you feeling? We're both feeling a little loopy today, I feel like.
Both feeling a bit loopy. I just drank a big coffee.
Ooh.
And so I'm loopy, doopy, ready to goopy.
One bad gloop.
And she do what I yoinky.
Yeah. Do you want to get in some facts? You want to get some facts and figures on this episode?
Facts make me so excited.
I'm
so
wet.
Yes.
I'm wet for these facts.
Oh, God.
This episode premiered February 11th, 2007. That means there was like fully a month in between last episode and this. I wonder if there was a mid-season finale, question mark?
What a that would be an interesting mid-season finale. I could see this. Yeah, I could see that.
I don't know. I was like, that's like a month. Because I remember we were close to catching up with the show, and now it just jumped to February.
Yeah,
but it was written by John Pardee and Joey Murphy and directed by David Warren. For hashtag Sondheim Watch, I remember that is the name of this episode, and it's from the musical Saturday Night that I've literally never heard of. For Wisteria International in France, this was called An Essential Detail. In Germany, this was called Deathly Past. And in Hungary, it was called Memory Traces. Ooh. And those are my facts. A lot less than last time. I feel like I had a whole page of facts with last week. But this is it. Short and sweet.
Yeah.
To the point.
Short and sweet. You ready to get in?
I'm ready to get in.
Mike. I don't know.
Savior of the universe.
Mike's memories are coming back. I have some mixed feelings about this story device. So Mike is starting to remember things from his time on the lane because he is seeing a hypnotherapist.
Yes.
I wasn't super pumped about this. One, because my prediction about him getting hit in the head with a basketball was wrong. And two, at first, my first initial reaction to this plot device was that it was lazy.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was just showing us. Yeah. It was just kind of giving us the information. We weren't really working for it.
Yeah.
There wasn't a different kind of build up to him remembering. It was just kind of, he is remembering.
Yeah, it would have been cool if they had stretched it out a bit, because the yellow gloves was like a cool clue of like, who's the yellow gloves? Who's the yellow gloves? And obviously there's like heavy-handed hints, not to skip ahead too much, but there's like that part where Mike is telling Carlos these yellow gloves, and then Orson's like, hey guys, he's wearing yellow gloves. But it would have been cool if they had maybe stretched out like him reaching for this clue for a couple episodes, so that the audience could try to piece together. They could have thrown in some red herrings of who is that person and ba-da-da-da. But you know what I mean? Like, there was like, instead of just giving us everything in this one episode, I mean, we have 6 episodes left in the season. I feel like they could have been a bit more scarce with the information they gave us, I think.
Yeah. I will say, though, it was interesting that they went this route.
Yeah.
The shot was spooky.
Something I do love is, as we go into this memory with Mike, we see the opening of a porno.
Mm.
The opening of a porn movie with Monique opening the door in lingerie and being like, hi, Mr. Plumber Man. Are you here to fix my leak? And he's like, yeah, I am. I was literally like, why is this the beginning of a fanfic that we read in Desperate Fanfiction 2?
Yeah.
It was comical to me. I was like, why? What? But I guess Mike is happy to realize that he was just genuinely being this woman's plumber.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, to get to the bits and bobs and pieces of this dream sequence, he's helping this woman literally fix a leak in her kitchen. He finds out he needs a part that he doesn't have. So he's like, yeah, I'll run off and I'll come back in like an hour.
Yeah.
He returns. The door is open. That was spooky. The sound drop that when he like saw the door was really good sound design. And he lets himself in. He can't find her. And he sees the aforementioned yellow gloves. And we don't see who they belong to. And that's all we know right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it was spooky. I agree that they were showing us too much. I wish this is all we got. I wish we didn't go any further in this memory. But it is cool.
Hell yeah.
It's a cool opening.
Yeah. And then we cut to Mommy Bree.
Literally a very, very pregnant Marcia Cross.
She's not pregnant. She's just comfortable with all those pillows and blankies.
A lot of thick, thick blankets covering up up to her chin so that no one can see any other part of her body.
Her mouth and her eyes.
I wish she was wearing a full burlap situation.
Content warning for... just mention of sexual assault. Bree is telling Orson about the sexual assault. And he is very confused. He seems to only remember trying to stand up, sitting back down, almost standing up.
Yeah.
And that's it.
And he doesn't seem to realize it is possible that it could happen to him, and she really does have to kind of hold his hand through the whole scenario and be like, honey, just believe me, like, it happened, and this is what happened.
There's a large number of people who just don't believe that men can be assaulted in that way, and it's dumb.
The important part of this scene is that she's like, we should press charges. You were assaulted. We should go to the police about this. Like, this is a tangible thing that we can get them on. And he's like, no, we can't. And she's so confused. And we get this little cutaway where he says, I think it's about time that you finally know what happened the night Monique Pollier died. The night the lights went out in Georgia. I already did that. And then we cut away because we don't get to know yet. We don't get to know that little mystery yet because we cut away to Queen Julie.
Julie Meyer, single queen. She's helping.
Like, we haven't seen her in like 8 fucking years.
No, we haven't.
I missed her.
I love that she's back.
Me too.
And I love that she's helping her mom pick out a sexy funeral dress. Susan's trying to pick out a dress for Jane's funeral. She's realizing she doesn't really have modest clothes.
Which I think is so funny because I feel like that's not necessarily the like attribute they've given Susan. I feel like Gabby is like the skimpy dresser. And so I think it's funny that like Susan doesn't have. I mean, well, you know, I say that. Remember her Valentine's dress?
That's true. Her fucking we saw right up there inside
cheek.
Her.
We saw inside of her. Her ass cheeks were out. That waiter almost got sucked right in.
into the vortex.
Her Valentine's dress was pretty short. Remember when she flew?
There's a moment in this episode that reminded me of that.
When she flew through the sea. I'm reacting the same way I did the first time we covered it. I'm so sorry. Oh, I think that's my favorite part of the whole series.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, God. What's going on? Basically, she needs clothes. She's like, she doesn't want, I guess this is important for later, she doesn't want to go in there and, like, advertise that her and Ian are dating. She wants to be like, no, I'm just a random woman. A random woman. She doesn't want people to think that she was a homewrecker, if you will, I guess. Mm. I don't really know. I have opinions on this. I guess it'll be easier to get into later. I just don't feel like I don't understand why all the pressure is on Susan. Mm-hmm. Like, it's his life. It was his wife and it's his relationship. I feel like it is on him to be like, this is my new partner and get over it. I don't know why so much is landing on Susan for
Mackenzie,
this.
It's always the woman's fault.
You're right. You're right. Ian's never done anything bad his whole life.
No, he's just a sweet little baby British boy. We then cut to Zach and Gabby at the mall. He just wants to buy her a bunch of stuff, and she will let him buy her anything except for jewelry, because she sleeps with people who buy her jewelry.
Gabby. I buy Gabby a diamond necklace. Yeah, she's like trying really hard to set hard boundaries with him, and he like I cannot see the benefit of being his friend. You are just being friends with a child who is just like, can I have a kiss, please, Gabby? Can I please have a little kiss, just a little kiss? Just and I'm like why would you be friends with him? This is so annoying. I would be so fucking annoyed if I was her. I'd be like, why am I hanging out with this fucking 18-year-old? Like, she's 31.
She's 31. She wants to feel young. She wants to prove that she's hip with the kids by hanging out with them.
I'm surprised that 30 wasn't the hard birthday for her. That 31 is specifically the hard birthday for her.
Yeah.
Maybe 30 still feels like part of your 20s. I don't know.
31 is when your life begins. I loved this product placement for Macy's, by the way.
Yes.
Just signs everywhere. But in the mall, Gabby meets a man in a suit. Later, we'll find out that his name is Luke. We don't get that from this scene, really. No. He's wearing a suit, which means he's rich.
He's fancy.
That's Gabby's number one turn on.
Yes. Even though he is a major himbo, because he does not understand what flirting is or a sex joke. I actually really liked her sex joke. What was it? It was. I remember I laughed really hard. I can't remember. I think it was like a coming joke or something.
Yeah. I can't remember exactly the phrasing, but we should find it or something.
Oh, yeah. It was so good. I laughed really hard. I was like, oh, Gabby. Gabby is smooth. She's a fucking smooth flirter. And Luke, it just goes right over his head. But he does recognize Zach when Zach walks up, because apparently he is one of Zach's legal team members. And Zach has no fucking idea who he is.
And I said, oh, no.
Oh, no, indeed.
And before we go to the next scene, Gabby gets Luke's card because she wants to give him a little call.
She wants to give him a little ring-a-ring, ring a little ring-a-ling-a-ding. And we cut back to Bree, who is upset because Orson has told her the truth, the titular truth. I feel like there's so many scenes in Desperate Housewives where it cuts away, a character learns the entire plot of the season, and then they come back and they're like, I can't believe it. And then we, the audience, have to just be like, okay, I guess you're reacting well. I don't know.
I guess you were told the truth. I don't think she was.
You don't? I mean, we don't really find out what she was told, right?
No.
She's just like, she's just upset. And yeah. And we're like, okay. And she's angry that he lied to protect himself. And she points out, she's like, you let Mike. So clearly he knows something that proves Mike's innocence, because she is like, you let Mike go to prison and he's an innocent man. How could you have done that? And she's like really mad about it. And he's like, I don't know how to help Mike without turning myself in. And Do they not know Mike got out? Is that not common knowledge?
They do know Mike got out, but they know that Mike doesn't have his memory.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Here's why I think Orson is lying. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, please. Give me your conspiracy theory. Give it to me.
Number one. I don't really trust a cutaway with Orson where he's like, I'm going to tell you the truth. Number two. If he was just worried about being implicated, why did he run Mike over with a car?
Literally.
So.
They have completely forgotten that. I think Bree even mentioned it and he like didn't react. Like it's like the story.
Does Bree know that he ran over Mike with a car?
No, I think she mentioned. She was like, he was just run over. And then like Orson was like, yeah, wild. Like, I don't think so. He's still lying about that. Mm-hmm. I feel like there's been at least five scenes with Orson and Bree where he's like, darling, it's about time you knew the truth. And then they cut away. Like, they did it in the dentist office, remember? Mm-hmm. And like beginning of the season, like, I feel like he is telling her the truth every five episodes.
Well, you know what, third time's the charm. Maybe we just gotta give him this last chance.
She needs to tell the whole truth and nothing but the truth.
So help him
goddess. Yeah, I said that.
Holy shit.
But something
feminism.
I'm Willow from Buffy. Remember when she fucking season finale, she says, oh my goddess. The important thing is that Andrew comes out of his room. He looks good, I want to say. Mm-hmm. Andrew looks great. He's just looking all grown up. I love his little haircut. Yeah. He looks so cute. He hears them arguing and eavesdrops. And I was obviously paying a bit more attention, like, oh, what's he hearing? And he's not really hearing much of anything other than them like disagreeing, kind of. Mm-hmm. And her being like, we should do something, and him being like, no. And then Andrew, that's kind of all he gets. And so I noted here, like, I'm curious what Andrew pulls from this. Mm-hmm. Only because he didn't really hear any of the tea. Well, he kind of just heard the disagreement happening.
Well, I mean, like, we get what he takes away from that later. Yes. Like at the end.
Yes. At this moment, I was just sort of like, what is he thinking? Because I couldn't tell like what his reaction was. But I love it later. I really do. I love this Andrew. I love this overly protective, sneaky little Andrew.
We then see the ice cream truck.
Oh, love an ice cream truck.
Tom and one of the babies is getting ice cream and Lynette's pissed about it. Yes. I thought this was like 30 minutes into the episode, paused, found out it was like 13 minutes in. So yeah. if that's not a gauge for how I felt about this episode.
When will this fucking be over?
When will this end? It's not that I hated this episode. I just felt like structurally it wasn't as strong as some of the previous episodes. Especially following the episodes in this season.
I was also watching this interaction and being like, why the fuck is this here? And then I realized it's to juxtapose it later with Austin, I think.
Yeah. This scene is truly and purely just so Edie can come up for the first time in three episodes, tell Tom to hire Austin, and then walk away. And here's the thing. I would like to nominate Tom Scavo as lesbian of the episode for checking out Edie as she walked away, because I looked at him and I went, this is Mackenzie. I was like, this is Mackenzie watching her walk away, because she's like, he tries to give her a coupon for pizza and she goes, Tom, you've checked out my ass enough times to know you I do not eat pizza. And then when she walks away, it cuts to Tom and he's like, hmm? And then I'm like, that's you.
Tom is my self-insert in this moment. Because
Tom is you in this episode. Oh,
but did you look? Did you look?
Yes. With that wide of a shot with her ass in the... Listen, there.
It was glistening in the sunlight.
There's studies in film schools teaching you about how, like, certain shots are framed a certain way to make you look at something. And that shot was framed to make us look at her ass.
The pants she was wearing were so great. And then, like, the sun was shining on her ass. It was, like, bouncing off her butt.
Just a single ray of sunlight spotlighting her ass for you.
Me and Tom together. I need to edit me next to Tom. And me and him are both just checking out her ass. Yeah. I absolutely was thanking God for a wonderful ass shot. I loved it. I loved it. I miss
Edie. I got a
green
screen. I can put you in there. Sorry.
Oh, thank God. No, I love that. Also, this is kind of where we get, I mean, I guess we can, I like totally forgot about the Austin cheating thing because it happened like so long ago in my brain that I have completely forgotten about it. So when she was like, Julie dumped him, I literally was like, what the fuck? And then I remembered that that happened.
Realistically, it's probably been like 2 episodes since we've seen Austin. But because we
haven't watched
so
in like a month and a half, and that's so why, because we had our Christmas break.
So I'm sorry if it just sounds really weird to be like, if you're binging this show, to be like, what do you mean?
It is wild. I just totally forgot. And so we kind of get the info that they like officially broke up from Edie, which is important, I think, for
good.
Later.
Good for Julie.
Julie's a single gal. Julie's a single gal again. Now she can go date May women. Mm-hmm. Okay. And also, we see Danielle later, and I just want to know, I want to see what's going on between Julie and Danielle. Are they fighting?
Yeah.
What's going on?
What's
I
going
need,
on?
I need
give
the
me the
youth
teen drama.
Again. Give me the teens.
Give me Degrassi.
First, give me Degrassi. There's going to be a fucking reboot of Degrassi.
I know. And unfortunately,
no
I have to watch it.
Yes, me as well.
You know how much Degrassi I watched as a kid, dude?
So much. Oh, do you remember the Shark in the Water promo?
Yes.
Maybe
baby, there's
a shark
in the water.
Oh,
there's
so
there's a girl
good.
on YouTube, who has like an hour long or like hour and a half long Degrassi video, and she talks about the promos as a section of that video.
Promo was so fucking good.
We'll
you know what else?
We'll put a link in the description below to that Degrassi video.
Yes, and you know what is so not fucking good?
What?
Zach showing up to Gabby's place to surprise her because I don't want you to be alone on your birthday, Gabby.
She's a and date.
His hair, I know we talked about his hair, but I just noticed it. I'm like, they had to have straightened it and like pulled it in. Like he has a little bob and it is wild looking. It is wild looking. But she has a date. You're correct. And he's immediately fucking peeved. And she is just trying to establish boundaries. And I'm like, Gabby, stop hanging out with this fucking baby. And this is the moment where I thought to myself, she has adult lady friends. Why doesn't she hang out with her adult lady friends?
Yeah.
Where we have not seen Gabby interact with another woman, I feel like, in 5 episodes. Like, she's just been hanging out with Carlos and Zach. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. I have a wrench to throw just real quick.
Yeah.
Or maybe not a wrench, but... Have we considered the fact that maybe these women aren't friends?
Honestly, maybe. I mean, we know that Susan and Bree are fighting right now, right?
Every description. That's right.
Yes, because Bree mentions it in the earlier scene. She's like, you let me be so angry with Susan when she was just protecting Mike, who was innocent. So I have hope that Bree and Susan are going to reconcile soon just because now Bree knows the truth. And I'm glad that was brought up. Honestly, that was a nice thread that the writers brought back. So, like, they're fighting. But there's no fucking excuse for everybody else to not be hanging out.
Yeah. I forgot that they were fighting. I wish we could have seen some, like, fighting shenanigans.
Yes. I mean, I feel like we saw Susan ask Gabby to take Zach on a date. I feel like that's the last time I don't know. But that doesn't feel like hanging out. That's just asking your friend to do something for you. I don't know.
If you try to Google the show, a lot of the descriptions are like, a group of women mourn the loss of their friend. So it's maybe Mary Alice was just all of their collective friend and they just kind of hang out now.
She was their mutual, and now they don't know what to do now that she's gone.
Yeah.
Wild. So who knows? I really need Gabby to stop hanging out with Zach. I'm annoyed.
Yeah.
He's not worth it.
He'll be gone by the end of the season, and then we'll see him in, like, season 7 or whatever, and then he'll be gone again.
I hope he's the big bad.
Me too. He's like he's a mogul. He's trying to fucking tear down Wisteria Lane.
Wisteria Lane. He's like,
to
I'm
put
dying
down a
out.
Corporation.
Wisteria Lane. I'm putting in a fucking Walmart on the lane. Get out of here. I like that we ud in unison. That's
I know. Me
that's
too.
True love right there. We cut to Orson arriving to see Alma and Gloria, and it's. I feel like every time he goes over to Alma, he does this weird posturing where he's like, hello, Alma. Like, he is really trying to grasp onto the power in the situation. Mm. And he basically thanks her because what she did to him kind of forced his hand to tell the truth to Bree. And he was terrified that Bree would leave him. And Bree has shown that she's not going to leave him.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's like, I'm not scared anymore. You can't ruin my marriage. I'm happy. Leave me the fuck alone. And she immediately tries to reshift the power. And is like, I'm pregnant with your baby. And he's like, I don't give a single fuck, lady.
Yeah.
Girl, like, yeah. Like, yeah. I don't know why she thinks that. That's going to keep him. Gloria seems to think that, and this comes up later, that he won't be able to deny his flesh and blood. But I'm like, you are underestimating his hatred for you both. So I don't know. I just don't understand why they think their plans are working. It just they're kind of comical villains with how low the stakes feel with them. You know what
it's
I mean?
It's kind of funny. Like watching
like,
Alma.
They're just like, floundering. They have like no stakes, no power. It's very weird.
It is an interesting dynamic as well between the two of them, because Alma was built up to be this like kind of mastermind when it was revealed that she was still alive, and she's just kind of this bumbling villain. She kind of doesn't know what to do. Mother Hodge is like the brains behind the operation.
And I'm sorry, Alma is big Dumbo right now to me, because the second she like is post-coital, she's like, the baby's inside, I can feel it. And I'm like, girl, that's not how that works. That's not how pregnancy works.
She literally says, like, I have a pregnancy test, but it's too soon to take.
It's just like, I don't know. She just feels really silly. She's like a silly villain to me. I wish she was more of a mastermind. I wish she felt more like a gone girl, if you will. Mm-hmm. I wish she was cooler. I don't know. And even Mother Hodge, they feel weird. The stakes feel weird.
Yes, I think Mother Hodge feels more villainy than Alma, but I disagree with you. I kind of like how Alma is a little silly. I think it's a nice contrast, especially since like they were trying to make season 2 so dramatic all the time. There was no levity with the Apple Ones.
No.
And so the fact that they can have serious moments and intrigue with that flip of, oh, this woman is not the brain.
She's like, not a villain. No.
I think it's like a very interesting dynamic because she was built as the villain, and then this other character gets introduced, and it's kind of just like a knockout.
And we'll get into it later, but what Gloria does later is wild, and I am hoping that they ramp her up as a villain in a dangerous way. Like I want Mother Hodge to be more dangerous. Like I'm very interested to see where she goes.
I think she's building to be that.
Oh, I love it. And I also think that actress is fabulous. Like, so I'm just like, yes, to the scenery queen. I love it.
Yeah. We then cut to the Scavo Pizzeria. Lynette's getting Andrew to take out the trash with her as a punishment for not cleaning the floors right.
She wants it to shine like the top of the Chrysler building.
Just like Bree Hodge would make it.
And then you and I are outside.
Yeah, we're outside.
Smoking some weed.
Smoking some weed.
Some weed.
Austin's high at work, which, whatever, man. Who cares? It's a shitty service job.
Don't get caught, though, dude. Like, smoke before you go to work.
Yeah, here's the thing. I'm not saying. We're not condoning this. Where I would never do this.
I would never smoke weed.
I would never do a drug in my life. But if
I do not know a drug.
What's a drug? How do you pronounce that? How do you spell that word?
Drug.
But if I were going to, you gotta be normal about it.
Yeah.
You gotta like not smell like weed when you go into work. You gotta like not smoke at work.
No.
Unless
smoke
it's
before you leave the house, spray on your Axe body spray.
Yeah, or take a shower. Like if you like take a shower, go to work.
Get your little eye drops. Like don't look like a fucking idiot.
Not that we've ever done this before.
No. I do not condone huid at work. I condone huid the second I'm getting off work.
Yes.
Also, I like saying huid that way because I like spelling it like we, like we.
Yeah.
Like O-U-I apostrophe D. And the thing is, this actor is playing high so stupidly.
He's like,
Ms. Scavo, you don't get it, Julie dumped me.
He fucking ditched a full joint and he's fucking gone. He is cooked out of his mind.
Dude, yeah, like he like it wasn't even done. He just threw it on the ground. Like just like pinch it and save it for later.
Yeah, I'm like, dude, you just wasted so much.
I
would kill for that weed.
Austin's got the good shit. And Lynette reacts as any employer on the face of the earth would react and fires him immediately. Because, yeah, like, I know we were joking about it.
I would say almost. You haven't worked my first job.
Okay, almost. Because, I mean, I have never been under the influence of anything at work before. Because I am too anxious of a person. I'd be like, I will get fired. Mm-hmm. They'll know. They'll sniff me out. Like, I will just be. But, like. Like I said, be subtle. Don't be fucking weird about it. And you won't get fired. And Lynette reacts very normally, in my opinion, and is like, get the fuck out of here, you dumbass. Because it's a new business and they really need it to run smoothly. They don't need somebody who might, you know, jeopardize that. Because also, this is, I presume, before legalization, right? So there's like, I presume, and that the liquor license was so hard to get. Like, I didn't find Lynette's reaction to be out of line if she's like really worried about the business.
No, you shouldn't smoke at work. Like,
don't
you
smoke at work. Yeah,
don't drink at work either. Like, we then cut back to Alma and Mother Hodge. Alma's freaking out. She's bugging. Hodge says, "Listen, I saw something the other day, but you have to look out this window." And I was like, "Are you gonna push her off the fucking roof?" Like, I legitimately
that is what it seemed
that.
Like. Well, I was, I in my brain, I went, "What did she see?" Like, I was, I fell for it too because I was like, "Did we see that, or is that a reveal? Like, what did she see?" Can I say I want Alma saying "Tammy tight ass" as my ringtone on my phone?
Fuck yeah!
This is the moment I was talking about. I kind of loved this. Is that weird? Gloria's a bitch. She pushes her in the attic and is like, you'll be able to see it in there. Click, click. And just fucking locks Alma in an attic.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if the little dungeon's still there because this is the Applewhite house.
Oh, that's true.
She could just put her in the little dungeon.
The little dungeon in the basement.
Yeah.
And that's that scene.
Yes.
We then cut to a mysterious woman.
You were gonna do this.
I don't know who.
Who is this woman?
She is. She's wearing sunglasses.
We haven't seen the mysterious women in seasons.
It's really messed up. Did she kill Jane?
She might have killed Jane.
It's kind of some weird, messed up, like, I have to say goodbye to every victim I've killed.
That might be how they're bringing back that season one storyline of these mysterious female assassins. Yeah.
So we know that this woman is here at the funeral, but then it quickly cuts to Susan talking to Ian at Jane's funeral.
Yes, and she wants to keep a low prof, and so she goes and sits down. And then this vulture of a woman comes and starts hitting on Ian at the funeral of her sorority sister.
The shot of the green screen just pasted into her fucking compact mirror. Just a little TV screen moment happening. I could green screen anything into that compact disc. It was a perfect rectangle.
I loved that. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it was very silly. This woman is aggressively hitting on Ian. I was uncomfy. And
she wants to bone him at this funeral.
She wants to bone him literally on the coffin.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
She's like, I want to open this coffin, get in there with Jane, and we boned down. We have a
threesome. What she would want. She talked about it a lot in college.
Oh, she was like, if I die, fuck on top of me, please. Fuck my husband. The thing is, once again, it's always the woman's fault, apparently.
Of course.
I would have been annoyed. If I was Ian's girlfriend, I would have been like, why didn't you turn her down harder? Like, he was sort of like, oh, I don't know. Maybe we'll talk soon. And I just, if I don't know. I feel like he should have been like, this is really inappropriate. Please don't do that. I feel like he would have been fully in his rights to tell her this is really inappropriate what you're doing. Yeah. I'm annoyed he didn't.
For multiple reasons.
Yes. Like, it was so weird.
But then we cut to Carlos, Mike's best friend. We get that scene that you kind of talked about earlier that we were hinting at with Orson and the gloves. This scene is really just Mike and Carlos talking about how he's starting to get his memories back. That little joke bit of Orson with the gloves. And then we move on.
Yes. We quickly go back to Susan at the funeral home. She's sitting behind the lady that was hitting on Ian, and this is it's a bit where basically Susan is sort of just like, hi, it's inappropriate that you're talking about him this way, because the woman is like, oh, he's so sexy when he's grieving. And basically the bit is that Susan is trying really, really hard not to admit that she's the girlfriend, but eventually she's like, it's me, I'm his girlfriend. The line, because when she said he has a girlfriend, they were like, until I see the bimbo, he's free meat. And then Susan goes, I'm the bimbo, he's my meat, was a very funny line to me. So I just wanted to mention that. But that's all, kind of all we get, this reveal that Susan kind of blows her cover at the funeral. Mm-hmm.
And then we cut to Scavo Pizzeria. Austin is back and higher than ever. No, he's sober this time. Lynette freaks out and starts yelling at Tom for rehiring him. About how she did it for a reason. And then he is like, can I talk to you for a minute? And he says, like, listen, I talked to him. He's not going to do it again. Like, but you cannot talk to me that way in front of my staff. Yeah. Like, I understand that you're the manager. I understand that you're helping me with my business, but this is my business. This is my staff. I'm going through a training with them. You can't just go off on me like that.
Yeah.
And also, Austin's hot. He's going to bring in all the teenage girls. And Edie is going to, like, put us in her welcome pack when she sells the one house a year on Wisteria Lane.
When she sells the single house.
We're going to be in there.
I actually kind of loved that moment because I do feel like Tom always is, like, lovingly a fuck up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so that Lynette can be like, why'd you do this? This was stupid. And he's like, I don't get why it's stupid. And she explains it, and that's it. I kind of love that shift of him being like, here's two fucking awesome reasons why we're keeping him on. Like, and he was so confident in them. And it was just like, I was like, ooh, I love this Tom. He was just sort of like, honey, I'm not stupid. You know what I mean? And I loved it, kind of. I love this moment.
Yeah, it's a nice shift. It's showing us that this is a good fit for Tom. This is something he's clearly passionate about and wants to be doing, and he wants this business to succeed.
He has the mind for it, yeah.
To do that, he has to be like, listen, Lynette, I know, like, you're the business bitch. You're the head bitch in charge. But here, I have to be that bitch.
I have to be the bitch.
I have to be the head bitch in charge, Lynette. And so you have to do me a favor. Yes. And he just starts going in front. The favor he has Lynette do for him is to just be yelled at in front of his staff.
Yes.
Very funny.
I also loved Tom being like, I check my balls at the door, so you got to check your balls at the door. Yeah.
I did think that this Tom yelling at Lynette and then being like, just a little bit more, is very you as well. I just think it's you energy to be like, I freaking hate you, I hate you, just a little bit more, I'm sorry, I'm gonna do that, it'll be over in a minute. Like, I feel like that's just you.
No, I identify with Tom a lot and I hate it.
Can we have any other lesbian of the episodes nominees? nominees for this episode?
I don't think so.
We could name you the lesbian of the episode.
I'm the lesbian of the episode.
Because you're here in form of Tom.
Me through Tom. Me and Tom are both the lesbians of the episode together.
If you send me a picture of Tom that you like and a picture of you that you like, I'll overlay them together. So it's like a weird,
like, we're like one. Spiritual, we're one being.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I love that. I'll gladly accept this award on behalf of me and Tom. Mm-hmm. It's very me. And when Lynette and Tom are like in their good spots where they're like communicating well and like being cute, it does remind me a lot of me and Rachel, because Rachel is very Lynette to me, because she's very like she's very like smart and direct and like gets shit done, and I'm like the dopey scruffy husband, I feel like. And so I do identify with Tom a lot in real life, which is very wild to me.
We then go to Luke and Gabby. This is
unhinged.
Unhinged, yeah. To say it lightly. I'm not, here's the thing.
What's up?
Recap this any way you want to. I don't really care about this.
No, I don't either. Like, I feel like we can glaze over this because it's basically like this guy is oblivious. Gabby wants to fuck him. And Zach basically blackmails him. He's like, I will, not even blackmails, just like, what's the word? Like, this is illegal. He basically tells this man, like, if you fuck her, I will fire you.
No, he's blackmailing.
That's blackmail, yeah. So, like, he's just basically like, he has a guy basically sneak in a work file that has a note that's like, if you have sex with her, you're fired. And so this guy, obviously not wanting to fucking lose his job, tries to leave and get out, and when Zach is outside fucking watching them, he calls and basically it's like, tell her she's old and she'll and
yes.
I just think it's manipulative and annoying, and I was like, dude, where is Bina? We need HR.
And this guy's a lawyer. He knows where he can sue him for this.
We need our HR department, because this is so illegal and very shitty.
Maybe there's probably a lot of other factors into like what would happen if he did this. But there is a witness there to be like, oh, hey, look, my boss just sent me this.
Yeah, there's other ways they could have reacted to this. Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm just saying he should have reported it. Anyway.
Bina is there and ready. Bina is head of the HR department and she's ready to help.
Fuck yeah, titties out.
I miss Nina.
Me too. But yeah, he eventually he does leave.
Yeah, he does. And Zach wins, because of course he fucking does. And of course we cut to Bree's body double.
Yes! No, we cut to Lynn Dean before that.
Who?
Lynn Dean, the woman who was giving her pussy to Ian? Giving her whole pussy to him? No, we cut back to the
I don't have
we cut back to the funeral, and it's the woman being like, my name is Lynn Dean. That woman is
right.
Ian's girlfriend. Anyway, goodbye, everyone. The way Susan gets up and starts flopping over everybody to leave the funeral reminded me of when she crashed through the ceiling.
Comedy queen. Her, like, almost unplugging that woman's oxygen tank was so much for me.
Her kill count almost went up again.
Susan has murdered a man. Never forget.
Yes.
But Susan, that man died. Fix.
Always remember.
Yeah. So that was bonkers.
And then at the end of that scene, the way she said, she just goes, hey. And it reminded me of the Jennifer Coolidge going, hi.
Oh, when is Jennifer Coolidge going to be on Desperate Housewives?
Oh my god, I would love that.
Oh, and then we do the finishing of the Zach scene. I think that's kind of interspersed between that whole situation.
Yeah.
But then we cut to Bree's body double.
Yes. Which Bree's outside and sees hanging from the ladder is
a bag.
A little pouch.
It looks like the bag of teeth.
It does.
I was like, oh, that's the fucking teeth. They found them, and maybe they're playing hot potato with the teeth. That was what I thought was going on, was because he was like, I hid them in the house. And so I thought they were just like, they found them and then were like literally going to play hot potato and see whose house they could get it in before the cops arrive. but also I do want to note, like, I was making a joke, but like on the trivia facts for this, that literally was her body double, because Marsha Cross, I think, was like 7-8 months pregnant with twins when this was being filmed. And so that's why whenever we see her, it's just like weirdly cut from like her shoulders up. The cuts between the body double and Marsha Cross's face were so funny to me because
they were so funny. It was so jarring.
It was so jarring. And the wig, I think you told me the wig got you. It was just this shiny, weird ass Brie wig. It was just wild. But Brie climbs up the ladder to get that bag of teeth.
And there's somebody cut the ladder.
Yeah, one of the rungs. And so she falls. Did you think Brie was going to fully die here?
No.
I was worried. And Orson and Austin? Orson and Andrew, a lot of names. Orson and Andrew run out and are like obviously freaking out. They're going to call, you know, an ambulance. And Andrew grabs the bag and I was like, Andrew's going to see the teeth. And he opens them and they're D&D marbles. Dice.
Oh. Yeah.
He's like, oh my God, who found my D&D dice? I'm playing with Justin. Where's Justin?
Where's Justin?
Justice for Justin. They broke up.
Justice for Justin. We then cut to a commercial break. When we get back, we are at the hospital. We find out that Brie is all right. She is just kind of knocked out at the moment. She's hurt, but she is going to be okay.
Yes.
And Andrew. This is where we see Protective Andrew. Andrew tells Orson that he overheard them talking about something happening. Mm-hmm. And although he doesn't know what it is, I don't agree with this, but he says, there's a reason my mom kicked me out last year, which you didn't deserve to be kicked out.
Yeah, no, yeah. Like,
maybe there was a reason for it, but it wasn't a deserved reason.
No, and maybe that's also maybe them as writers responding to the audience reaction to Andrew, because I'm going to assume a lot of audience members did not like Andrew back when he was kicked out. So maybe that's just a response to that as well, and just acknowledging that he was very different back then, you know?
Yeah, he's definitely acknowledging it because he literally says, like, you haven't seen bad Andrew, Orson.
Evil Prince.
Okay? You have not seen evil Prince Andrew. And if you hurt my mom, you're going to see him. And so he walks up to the nurse and goes, do you see that man? That man's my mom's husband. He's very dangerous. And if you let him be in the room alone with her, I'm going to make sure this hospital fucking burns down. Because he is bad and violent.
I love him being protective over Brie. What a turn they've had as a duo. Like, I love that Brie and Andrew are at this place of caring about each other more, to the point where Andrew feels protective over her. Mm-hmm. That's my mommy!
Only I can be mean to my mommy.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I enjoy Andrew being supportive and protective of Brie.
We then get a very short scene of Gabby being drunk, Zach knocking on the door and being like, oh, well, I figured if I couldn't be with you on your birthday, I would rather give you a gift. And then they just hang out and she falls asleep.
I have to recreate this mug for our store.
Yes.
Where it's like world's greatest friend with a bunch
world's
of flowers.
Greatest friend. Is his face or her face on it?
There's
I thought
faces
like one
on
of
it?
Their faces. We should... I think so. I thought so.
Oh, I thought there was a picture on it. Shit. Maybe.
World's best friend.
All I know is I want to recreate it and put it in our store.
I do too. I want to get a two mug set. One that has my face, one that has your face.
Yes.
And I have yours and you have mine.
Yes. It's like that mug I have with my baby picture on it.
Yes. I'll just take that one and I'll put a baby picture on my mug.
Yes.
To you.
And we cut to Susan hiding with dead people? Girl.
She's just like splayed on the floor
barefoot.
Of an embalming room.
Barefoot. She's fucking barefoot. Does
maybe Susan is the best character because she's so fucking hardcore.
Does she not have a car? I would have just gone to my car and like
she
turned on the music and like... No, he was there before. No,
you're right. Maybe Julie dropped her off.
I don't. It's just...
Her mom dropped her off.
Girl, why? Why are you laying barefoot in an embalming room?
She doesn't give a fuck.
This thing was stupid.
I respect Susan for that. I respect her so much.
I have so much respect.
She's a freak, and I have freak rights. Yeah, Ian finds her in the embalming room, and he wants to be proud. He wants to be hand in hand, and he wants to walk out there in front of everybody and say, love wins.
Love is love, okay?
We need to be proud.
Basically proposes to her, and I am gagged with a spoon. Mm-hmm. I don't care. I don't want them to get married. Are you fucking kidding me?
What did I say, though? They're not going to get married.
I don't want them to. I hate him.
I have a question.
Remember when he was so jealous they could barely have sex? Okay?
Yeah.
Like, no, I don't want this guy married to her.
I don't either.
I'm mic or die, okay?
Mic or die,
Susan,
can I say one more thing about Susan being a little freak?
Please.
She knows what a blood cutter is.
Yeah. Why does she know that?
She uses it a lot in her profession. Oh, anyway.
She's actually like Dexter. There's like a whole other series that's just Susan being like a murderer who has a day job.
I would love that. But yeah, he proposes. My question to you very quickly is it more entertaining if I live in this illusion that they will get married or if I stick to my guns and I'm like, they're not going to get married?
I say live your life. I do not want them to get married. I would like it. I would like to not see it. So I'll be a Debbie Downer with you.
Okay. If anybody gets really mad or is really annoyed by this, then we'll figure it out. But whatever. We then go back to Mike in his little hypnotherapy. Isn't the end of the episode, which I thought it could have been a good end of episode.
Yes.
But we just get more of the scene. Orson is the man with the yellow gloves. And then we it's a dun, go back dun, to real
life. Yeah, like yeah. They just show us. That should have been it. We didn't need, I don't know. It just feels weird. It was given a lot. And don't we kind of immediately go back to the memory. Like there's like a moment where Mike like opens his eyes and panics, but then he goes back to the memory?
I think so. I don't know. I didn't catch that. I might have been writing a note.
And Orson is like, yeah, Monique isn't feeling well. I'm her friend. She's napping and I just thought I'd clean her house a bit because he's like scrubbing the counter or something, which is fishy as fuck. And Mike's like, well, I'm just going to fix this. I'm just going to fix this pipe then. That's nice of you to be a good friend. Orson's like, no, I'll do it. I'm really handy. Take your money and just go. Have a good night. And Mike is kind of a stay in his own lane kind of guy. So he's like, all right, sure. And we see the big thing that the wrench was clearly left there while Mike was gone. Because then Orson is like, oh, wait, don't forget your wrench. And like the camera shows us this pass off of the evidence because that wrench is what implicated Mike. So clearly something fucking happened with that wrench while Mikey Poo was gone.
And Mike knows it. So he goes to confront Orson.
Oh, shit.
We get that quick Danielle moment of just like, she's not here. And then.
Yeah, random.
We go to the hospital. Orson's leaving because Bree's asleep. The nurse convinces him to go home. But in the parking lot, like in the top part of a parking garage, I believe it is, it's confrontation time.
Oh, yes. I loved this.
I loved watching Orson run over like the hoods of cars trying to get away.
Yeah. That was so fucking good. Kyle MacLachlan's like, I'll give you my action here. I was in Dune. I'll give you some fucking stunts, okay? And they have a fight. They're punching. We don't even really get an end of episode monologue this time because we just have Mary Alice sort of say recapturing the past is a tricky business. Most memories are souvenirs of a happy time and others are deadly. And there's a moment where they're punching each other. Orson pushes Mike away and he kind of pushes himself back as well on top of the edge and he loses his balance and he falls off the fucking parking garage.
To be continued.
To be continued. Is this the first time we've gotten? No, we've had a two-parter before, yeah, I think.
We have. I loved the so like freeze frame shot on him midair, like just fading to black.
Yes. Whoa. That was episode 314, baby.
That was amazing. Although I did say previously that it was a little bit of an underwhelming episode for me.
Yeah, I feel like I want them to stick the landing. I really do. My fingers are crossed. My fingers, my toes are crossed. I want them to stick the landing with this storyline. Yeah. They're giving us a little too much. I need them to be a little bit more creative with it. But I also am loving it. So, you know, and I love, my favorite part about it is I love talking about it with you.
Yeah, me too.
It makes me love the show more, being able to talk to you about it, honestly. Yeah.
I have a question for you.
Ask.
Are you the lesbian of the episode?
I'll marry you. So, I think I am.
Thank God.
Right? Me and Tom, me and Tom's body.
Yes. It's like the movie Freaky.
Yes. Me and Tom's body in this episode is the lesbian episode. Yeah. And also, I'll marry you.
Yay!
And with that, we have been Wisteria Gaze. If you want to find us on Twitter, you can find us at Wisteria Gaze or Instagram at Wisteria Gaze _. One day I will get the pure Wisteria Gaze handle that a random man posted 6 times on 5 years ago. One day I'll get that handle on Instagram and then I will know peace. You can also find us at our website, wisteria.gay.
And on wisteria.gay, you can find links to our Discord, our merch page, and our Patreon. Our Patreon is great. It is pay what you can, minimum of $2, and it helps support us and the show. You also get some really cool perks like episode notes, ad-free episodes, and episode shout-outs. So we're going to take the next second to shout out our patrons. So thank you to Amanda.
Annie.
Kaylin.
Cheryl.
Drewzilla LaFay.
The best fucking name.
Elise. We said that last time, too.
I know. Elise.
Helena.
Kim.
Liv.
Lydia.
Nadia.
Sarah.
Sarah
S. Oh, they're both Sarah S. Oh my gosh, Sarah's. You two are twins. Sarah Schroeder.
And Sarah Swihart.
And Tom.
And Tom. Not a second Tom. Same Tom.
Just the same Tom.
Just
Tom,
the same one, just said twice.
I hope you had a happy opening of Scream week.
So do I. I hope it was everything you could ever have dreamed of. And I can't wait to see it. You know what I love?
What do you love? Tell me.
I love reviews because they help people find a show.
Ooh,
and I love it when people find our show because then more people hang out with us.
Yeah.
And they also just make our day generally. We like reading them.
Yes, I do.
At the end of every episode, we pose a question to help get those rejuices flowing. That's review juices. And this question should be, what would be your dramatic reveal at Jane's funeral? I don't know.
Oh,
or what would your body double be doing for you on Desperate Housewives?
My body double would be leaping from roof to roof for me because I have just stolen one of Edie's bras and I'm having to escape via the roof system of Wisteria Lane. And so my body double is leaping from roof to roof to get me to safety on the story lane. I stole it because I want to wear it on my head like a little hat.
A la
Weird Science.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. I wanted to clarify. I didn't want anyone to get any weird ideas in their head, okay?
My body double. I would be doing like a normal scene and then it would be brought up that I know how to do a backflip and they'd be like, what? And then it would just cut to me being like, yeah, I know how to do a backflip. And then I take a couple steps back. I squat. It cuts to my body double, does a backflip. And then when I land, it cuts back to me just like getting up.
I love that. It's like when Betty White did that dance on Golden Girls where she like did a full split and then it's just... Betty White being fabulous and it was her body God. Very obviously her body double and it's great.
Yeah, so that's what I want.
I love that. So when you leave us a review, let us know what your Wisteria Lane body double is doing for you on Desperate Housewives.
Yay. And if you want to find me, Ned, on social media, you can find me at Ned Jorts.
You're at Ned Jorts still
on Instagram.
Oh, nice. And if you want to find me, you can find me on at Mackenzie Wilkes on Twitter.
Mackenzie.
Ned.
I love you.
I love you.
Everyone else out there.
Yeah.
Stay juicy.
Stay juicy.